Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Psychic Teachers. I'm your host, Deb Bowen.
And I'm Samantha Faye.
He is with me. And we also have a wonderful guest tonight. And we are delighted and honored that you have joined us at whatever point during your week you have checked in to hear this great show we've got tonight. Samantha, tell everybody about our wonderful guest, please.
Okay, wonderful. I'm so excited. Okay, so tonight we have with us Robin, who is the creative force behind the mystery of the Firefly Forest. In the spring of 2013, she began this project as part of her personal journey towards hope and healing. She is a self-taught carpenter, and with the help of her young sons, she conceived, carved, and then secretly placed each door along a well-traveled and picturesque trail in the heart of America. Working together, their anonymous efforts strengthened the bonds of love, sharing, and unity that was such an important role in their lives. However, none of them could have anticipated the impact Robin's work would have on the lives of so many others. From the beginning of the Firefly Forest, members of the community became followers, and as each piece of the collection was added, the group of followers grew. Families came together to Firefly Forest to marvel at the wonder and meaning of each work of art. Those who had been strangers developed a different sense of community as they gathered to admire the workmanship. Everyone wondered who might be behind it all, and an entire community was brought together by the magical appeal of childlike imagination. But most profound was what people found in their quiet moments in the Firefly Forest, the peace, joy, hope, and relief they so needed. Robin and her amazing sons now reside in Utah. She graduated summa cum laude with her bachelor's in psychology in May and now works in marketing as she prepares for her graduate program, which begins in January. She continues her creative journey, which she documents on her website and shares on social media, which we have linked up for you on our Facebook page. And she recently donated an enormous magical tree to the Hope Garden at Primary Children's Hospital in Salt Lake City, Utah. And I've linked that up to our Facebook page, too. It's so beautiful. Please take a look on all the links we've put up there so you can see Robin's beautiful work. So, Robin, thank you so much for being on our show, and welcome to Psychic Teachers.
Oh, thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
Yay. So we had a couple of listeners actually sent Deb and I the link to the documentary, The Gnomist, and we've watched it several times. I've watched it with my kids several times, and I immediately had to buy one of your doors, and I got the book, and my kids and I read it, and I've just been, like, a super fan ever since I saw the documentary, and I know Deb has too, and we would just love for you to share with our listeners a little bit about who you are and how you came to start this journey with the Firefly Forest.
Okay, who I am, wow, that's...
Well, you don't have to answer that.
Ever really know.
Just enough that you want to tell 100,000 people. That would be good.
Really, right?
Right.
I'm just kind of basically a normal person. So we found ourselves just transplanted and living in Kansas, and we had recently, most recently before that, lived in North Carolina. We'd been there for a couple of years, and we received transfer and found ourselves in Kansas. And I remember getting the news, like, we're moving to Kansas, and I was like, really? Kansas? But the truth is, once I got there, you know, I'm kind of an accidental gypsy, and so I'm very, very used to the process of acclimating into new communities and starting over. And this was particularly difficult because before we even moved to Kansas, my marriage was really at a breaking point, and for years before that, but this was just kind of the point where the inevitability of divorce was
looming.
Yes, and so I moved there with a very heavy heart, and once I moved there, I looked for a trail because I am a person who really needs to be in nature. Because it's very soothing to me. It helps me center. It helps me recharge. And I just need it. And so moving to Kansas, I was like, where am I going to find nature? And accidentally stumbled upon this hidden gem, which ended up being the trail that became Firefly Forest. And, you know, divorce is such a difficult experience for absolutely everyone. I don't think there is anyone who's experienced a divorce that doesn't walk away with deep, deep scars. And and I was just really alone. You know, I felt so alone in the entire experience. Mm-hmm. And as I discovered this trail, I was first drawn there because I needed to heal, and I needed to mourn and grieve. And what I noticed was my youngest son was pulling away,
mm-hmm.
not from me necessarily, but the things that he was saying were felt very like they could become hopeless. Like he would say to a teacher, "Oh, it doesn't matter. We're just going to move again anyway." And that really caught my attention.
Sure.
And so I invited him onto this trail. And on this trail, I had already become very familiar with these amazing hollow trees. And if you're from the West, you probably haven't seen hollow trees. Back East, they're not terribly uncommon, but to me, they were so magical. And to me, it just seemed like, oh my gosh, this is the perfect portal to this magical place. I'm kind of a story creator in my mind. It's kind of just what I do. And these holes in these trees just seemed like they were meant for me. And I invited him on the trail. And as he joined me, we started to talk about, because, you know, you can't say to your kids, "Son, I realize you're feeling a little weighted. How can I help relieve that burden?" It just doesn't work like that.
Not with boys, so, that's true.
Right, right. And so what we did is we created a story as we were walking in this forest. And he was like, "Oh, this trail is so long and it's very humid there." And I said, "I just want you to get to this one hollow tree." And that became the red door. And so once we filled the red door, we just had to keep going. And the great thing was is it encouraged him to stay on the trail with me. It encouraged him to go further, which created more opportunity for us to have these great conversations about all sorts of different things. And all the while, we were creating this living narrative. And for us, it was very bonding, particularly while there was so much turmoil. Not to say that it was contentious at home, but it was heavy.
Sure.
You know, it was just heavy.
Wow.
So that's how we got there. Yeah.
So for anyone listening who, you know, is just new to Robin and hasn't seen The Gnomist and seen her work, it's so important to point out that these aren't just doors you created. You created like a little village, and you had furniture inside these hollow trees, and you had these beautiful signs everywhere with these uplifting messages, you know, like love is spoken here and you belong here. And you had little like hollow tree lane signs. I mean, it's just so beautiful what you created. Did your sons have a lot of input on that as well?
Well, Parker was kind of the muscle. Parker's my older son. And he was 15 at the time. And so he was happy to provide muscle when I needed it.
Mm-hmm.
But the creative kind of story that came to life really was a result of, it's just an extension of me, you know, like what makes me giggle, what I believe, and, you know,
like
what I think
will
movers.
Bring.
Yeah. So that's a really good example of, like, so Tyler and I really enjoy C.S. Lewis and Lord of Rings, and, you know, we've read them many, many times. And so we kind of wove our experiences, things, interests that we shared into each home that we were building. And so the Acorn Movers is funny because it represents, you know, the fact that we are so familiar with moving. And one of the funny things is every time we've moved, and it's been so very many times, inevitably, there was a box that said fragile somewhere, of course. Most people have experienced this. Mm-hmm. And when it was delivered upside down, mm-hmm. under the heaviest other box, and everything inside was just shattered.
Of course.
And so we did that for our little house, and we would put it upside down so that it said fragile, this end up, and we intentionally put it upside down, and then I put some broken glass in there. And the really interesting thing, which I found to be remarkable, was every time I came by that house, and I do mean every time, someone had taken it and turned it right side up.
Oh, for goodness sake.
And I thought, what? I know. Isn't that remarkable? That is, and that, to me, one of the most powerful experiences that I had as a result of my entire time there in Firefly Forest was that we as humans are certainly different, and we're supposed to be, and I love it. But we also have some very striking similarities. We have things that are so common to us that bond us, they connect us. And that is a very hopeful realization when you are feeling so desperately alone.
Wow, that's so beautifully said. That's the whole point of the show, Deb and I do, is to focus on that connectivity. That's how we started. She's a practicing pagan and I'm a practicing Catholic, and yet we are still very good friends and see eye to eye on many things, and we love to focus on that connectivity. So you worded that beautifully. I wanted to ask you, though, it seems like when you and your sons were creating this magical place, I mean, I'm assuming you didn't have everything that came with it afterwards in mind. I'm assuming you did this for you and your family, and yet the ripple effect it had was enormous. Can you explain a little bit of that journey and how other people started to come to Firefly Forest?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I still get chills when I reflect upon this. It was such a powerful experience. Certainly, the first door went up for me and Ty. Absolutely. And I just thought it was the funniest thing. We put it up. It made me giggle. And every time we were on that trail to see what the kinds of things that people were doing, the way they were interacting with that door was so funny to me. But, you know, it just happened. We'd put another door up, and I would be jogging by one day, and I would see a welcome mat. Someone had put a welcome mat out inside in front of this door. And I thought that was funny, you know? And so I would play off whatever somebody else had added to it, and that's how the story came to life. I'll tell you what, anyone who has ever, I have such a unique experience because I created it, so I have that perspective, but I also got to witness how other people experienced it for the first time, which was delightful. It was just such a joy to see somebody else, particularly kids, because they are elated. You know, they absolutely believe that this is something wonderful and magical, and here it is for them to feel in touch, whereas parents or adults kind of noodle it for a minute, and they're like, what the? And then they become delighted because their child is delighted. And so to watch the delight it was bringing to other people was remarkable. And so, you know, that certainly fueled me. I mean, I was like, well, if they enjoy it, I love that they enjoy it. And it made me feel like I was contributing to their experience in a positive way. Mm-hmm. And what we started to see very quickly, which became undeniable, that first of all, there was a massive increase in terms of, like, the visitors to the trail, like so much so that there would be, like, traffic jams.
Wow.
And,
goodness sake.
Yeah, it was really amazing. What's up?
I'm laughing. I'm just, we have this neighborhood in the town where we live that at Christmas, just the whole street lights up, and they have people out directing traffic as cars drive by to look at the Christmas decorations on this one street. And I have this vision of you needing traffic directors in the fairy forest.
Right. Well, and oddly enough, some emerged. And that was interesting, too. We would have, like, Tyler and I would go out on Saturday mornings, you know, after we'd placed something, because then you got to see people experience it for the first time. And, you know, as we were fairly well established at that point, and there were men who just, like, self-appointed men who were, like, giving kind of tours from one house to another, and they were giving the history, like orating the history of how these homes emerged. And Tyler and I are sitting there, and they're totally saying things that were completely incorrect. And Tyler and I are just looking at each other going, well, that's not how it happened. But it was funny, you know?
Yeah.
It was funny to see that they cared enough and they wanted to be involved enough. They wanted to touch it in some way. And it was a very positive thing.
You know what I love you're going through this difficult transition with your family. You know, that a lot of people can sink into depression and despair going through that, and yet you found this ray of light to hold on to, and in the midst of that, you prepared an entire fairy wedding. which I think just speaks to the hopefulness, you know, that is a part of your work. Was that your idea?
Well, that was, you know, so I had planned a fairy festival, a firefly festival is what it was, and we just kind of started with that and then elaborated a little more and included this little wedding because what I was trying to prepare the people who had become regular visitors. You know, as we were on the trail, yes, people were visiting frequently, but what I noticed, and perhaps it's because I had the perspective of someone who was hurting, I noticed as a different group of people who were coming consistently, and those were the people who were hurting. Mm-hmm. Those were the people who were suffering. And it was almost as though, for a brief moment in time, this area in the forest was calling to them, and they were almost compelled to be there. There was, and truly, there was something happening. It was, particularly for people who were suffering, a place where they came and they felt peace or hope. Now, why that happened, you know, we all have our opinions or assumptions, whatever they may be, but I can tell you it did happen. It absolutely happened. And as a result, you know, you were talking about during a time where things were going, were very difficult for me personally, and that's true. But as I saw people interacting with what we were creating and the joy it was bringing them, or the people who were drawn to there to enjoy the peace that they experienced while there, I realized that when we're suffering, it just seems like we always feel alone. I think that's part of suffering. But in doing this, I could see I wasn't alone. It was just a matter of being willing to look up, to take another person's hand, to reach out and offer my hand to another person. We are not alone. And whether you're standing in the forest or you're standing in New York City, it boils down to it's your willingness to look up and see the people around you when you feel so alone.
Mm-hmm. I have a couple of questions actually, Robin. One, in the documentary, of course, there's the story of the little girl who died, who's little owl. And
right.
I have to tell you, and I told you before we started this, I wasn't sure I could get through this hour without crying, and I'm still not sure I can. But you mentioned before we went on air that that there were many other stories like that one. Would you share another one with us about how that healing and that work that you did was so powerful to other folks?
Absolutely. One of the funnest ones for me personally is it gets very cold in Kansas. It's either super hot and humid or it can be just brutally cold. And so when it's cold, to get people to go outside on a trail, I mean, they have to be pretty motivated. And I found people on the trail year-round, no matter what. And so the story continued on. I made sure that it looked like, you know, activities were going on at each house. And there was this little family who I came across on this trail. And the parents were just so cute. They just looked exhausted. And new parents understand that exhaustion that only parents, you know, really experience. And they were exhausted, and they had two little kids. One was a baby, and the other one looked to be about 5, maybe 7 years old. And he was a little boy, and he had a variety of handicaps, pretty serious handicaps. And he was on his crutches, and he was dragging. I mean, he may as well have been dragging them because they were just spent. And he was so enthusiastic, and he was so determined to get to these homes where the purple door is. There were several together. And I watched them for a little while, and I had the chance to just kind of walk behind them, and I could hear what he was saying to them. And he was telling them about the creatures that lived there and all of the things that these creatures had done. It was a story that he had created, and it had become so important to him that this little guy who was just really riddled with physical disabilities felt so certain that this was a place that he needed his family to be, and he was convincing them to keep coming along. And as I passed them, I looked at his parents, and I just kind of winked and smiled, and they smiled back, and they were like, we just can't keep them away. And, you know, they just kind of shook their head, we just can't keep them away. And I thought, amazing.
Yeah.
this is amazing. This is somebody whose struggles are way, or they seem to me to be way more intense than mine. And he's so enthusiastic, and he's dragging his parents into this, the depth of this forest to see something that to him is alive, to him is meaningful. And so to take a concept, any concept that motivates people, that motivates them to become better, motivates them to share what they have, and motivates them to let go of some of the hurts and ugly holds that exist in their life, what is better than that, you know? And we saw people with it, you know, oh, my gosh, I got this note once from this man who was talking about, or I assume it's a man, about giving up heroin. You know, and how this was giving him the strength to get through it. And think about that for a second, like the weight of that. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to support him. I just felt, oh, my gosh, I want to, how can I help? But I can't help. And so it just became more a place where you could leave your intentions for a person. You can do it. We love you. And then you didn't even have to say it. It just spread to the people who were coming. People would leave notes. They'd write things on the sidewalk in sidewalk chalk. You know, very positive affirmation type things. You've got this. Keep going. You know, very motivational things. So you stepped into this magical part of the trail, and by the time you journeyed through it, you felt lighter. You felt more excited to keep going. You felt like you had the energy to keep going. And for the people who were there suffering, who stepped onto that trail like the parents just bent, to walk out smiling, that is a miracle. That is amazing.
It really is. How are you noticing your boys responding to all of this?
Oh, well, Tucker was funny because he was, you know, he's older. And if he were totally into this, I mean, something would probably be wrong with him, I guess. So he enjoyed it. He enjoyed that we were doing it, and he got to be a part of, you know, the installations. He really enjoyed, so he was on the cross-country team at the time, and they would run through that forest. He really enjoyed hearing his teammates talk about it as they were running through. He liked having the dual perspective, you know, knowing where it came from, and then also being a part of the group who was talking about where it came from, you know. So he liked that. But Tyler, you know, again, miracles for me and my little family. For Tyler, it gave him a sense of connection, and it gave him a sense of ownership of something that was being created. He was building something that people were coming to value and respond very enthusiastically to. He was at school one day, and one of the projects, the kids were, it was some art project, and they were coming up with these poems. And this kid was writing a poem about his family's experience with this red tree, this red door. And he wrote this little poem, and Tyler came home and he told me about that and how funny he thought it was. And for him, I think it kept him from fully turning inward. You know, he stayed connected to our family. It bonded Parker and Tyler. You know, Parker wasn't necessarily a part of building them, but he was super supportive as we were doing it. And it allowed them to continuously express love to one another and dream and create and draw. And, you know, as we would sit in church, we would draw because that's what we do. And I would draw a tree, and then Tyler would draw, you know, a door in the tree, and Parker would draw a troll coming out of the tree. You know, it was just a thing that we did. I don't know. It still is a thing that we do. It's kind of weird. But it still lives, you know. And it's
so
still
cool.
Very much is a part of our family.
You know, and for all you know, your little one might be the next Lord of the Rings author.
Oh, good gracious, I'm pretty sure he will be.
And then he can be interviewed years down and tell the story of how his mother inspired her. I'm sorry, Deb, you were going to say something?
I was going to ask, neither of the boys were ever tempted to say when their friends were talking about this or whatever. They were never tempted to say.
No.
Yeah, that's us. I mean, how did they... They keep that secret so well.
Well, I can't tell you how they did. I can just tell you that they did. And we never really even said, this is a secret. Mm-hmm. Don't tell anybody. It was just implied. It was ours. You know, it was ours.
Well,
and
it's almost like it wasn't your secret to tell. It's almost like magic was working through you guys.
Absolutely, and I absolutely believe, you know, when people talk to me about, look at what you've created, look at what you've done, and it was very difficult for me in the beginning because I absolutely see myself as a facilitator, and that is it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why anonymity was so important throughout that project. And in fact, when they started filming, Tyler and I only agreed to do it if they promised not to reveal our identities. And that was the plan. And due to some unforeseen things, the plan changed and our identities were revealed in the end. But I'll tell you, the reason the anonymity was so important was I recognized very quickly people assigned meaning to this experience based on what they needed it to be. You know, some believed it was elves, tooth fairies, Easter bunnies, everything. But in putting a face on the person who is creating it, you know, definitively assigning creations, I felt like really robbed from how people got to experience this,
mm-hmm.
this living story. It could be what they needed it to be, and I wanted it to be what they needed it to be because, in fact, for me, it was what I needed it to be. So I just felt like that allowed everyone to have a very personal experience, a very unique experience, the way that I was.
You know, I had that thought when I was watching the documentary and your identity was revealed. I felt that sense of disappointment, too. Like, oh, I wish this could still be an unknown thing. And then I quickly switched and thought, no, this is absolutely perfect. Because what it does is it leaves the viewer with the message that we are magic. That we can create magic in our lives, that it doesn't have to be something outside of us. It doesn't have to be something mythical like a fairy or a gnome. It's inside of us. And that's the message,
exactly.
One of the messages I was left with after watching the documentary.
And we all have the capacity to do that.
Mm-hmm.
We do, and I think that was one of the gifts.
I can't use the drill like you can, Rob.
I don't
It may not be with woodworking skills, but we all have our thing. We all have the ability to enhance or change the way another person is experiencing something. And even if it's just a simple act of kindness, those are the most effective anyway, you know? So the trick is to understand what your gifts and talents are and how can you use them in ways that will just, in small, tiny ways, pepper somebody's experience with positive jewels, you know?
Yes.
And so I need to ask a question about how things shifted as the city made you take them down. But can we hold that question until we have to do a break? Robin, we do have a sponsor, and we do need to tell people about that. And then can we come back to that question after that, please? Samantha, want to tell about it?
Sure.
About Audible?
So, as you all know, we're sponsored by Audible. If you go to audibletrial.com/psychicteachers, you will get a free 1 month trial. The great thing about Audible is if you download a book and you're like, I don't like that one, you can just shoot them an email and they'll give you another free credit. So don't be, afraid that you're going to be locked into some big contract. They're super easy to work with. This week, I'm recommending The Gnome in the Neighborhood, Modern Fairy Tales of Forgotten Magic by Justin Dawkins. It's 2 hours of listening material, and if you don't want to become a member, you can just download it for $6. It's called The Gnome in the Neighborhood, Modern Fairy Tales of Forgotten Magic. So if you're interested in that, go to audibletrial.com/psychicteachers.
Thank you, lovely. Audible is a great organization. Yeah. So we certainly appreciate your support of Audible for us. So, in the documentary, Robin, I had a lot of reactions to the city's decision that all of this had to come down. And I get it. I mean, I understood what the fellow who was interviewed was saying. I got it, but that, of course, it was this huge disappointment for me. It was so sad. I cried at that point in the movie, too. But I also thought, you know, there's that part of magic is timing. And when something has run its course or shifted or something, it's time for something different to happen. And I wondered how you saw that time.
Well, first of all, let me say that I have a very tender feelings towards Greg, who is the gentleman in the film. He is not a bad guy. He is a guy working within an institution following, you know, rules and regulations. And he really took it on the chin, for sure, poor guy. I was disappointed to know that they had to come down. Of course I was, because, you know, I saw how important this had become to a lot of people, and the idea of it just evaporating really broke my heart. It made me very sad. And so I did what I could to kind of prepare the folks, you know, try and help them understand the transition was coming. And so I tried to, and that's where the Firefly Festival and the little wedding came from. I tried to transition them into the mindset of everything has its season. And that is absolutely true for each one of us and for, you know, this beautiful world that we live in. Yes, it's difficult to see summer go, but it brings an amazing fall. And it was difficult to say goodbye to Firefly Forest, and it was a transition. But I will tell you, I learned something very important, and that was, yes, that time, it was brief, and it had its moment where it was meant to be, but absolutely that experience has come with me. It has changed me, and everywhere I go, I very literally take a piece of Firefly Forest with me, and I allow Firefly Forest, the magical experience that I had there, to affect whatever I'm doing right now. And when I'm working in marketing and not loving it, there's not much of an opportunity for Firefly Forest to exist. However, because of my experience there and because it has changed me, because it travels with me in my heart and in my soul, I am able to absolutely let that color the experiences I'm having now, even if it's boring and in marketing. So I think that's true for all of us. We can take it, because I did visit, whenever I go back to Kansas, of course I'm on that trail. Mm-hmm. And still magical things happen for me when I'm on that trail. But there definitely is a different feeling when I'm there. It's definitely different. And that's sad, and also it makes the experience that I had even more reverent. You know, it makes it more unique that it really was just a brief moment that was very needed in that forest, in that community at that time.
Well, and to me it reminds me, you know how the Buddhists do the sand mandalas that they work forever on and then they just blow it away at the end?
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of that. I mean, that brief experience that you are able to create, you know, makes us focus on the present and be grateful for what is in the present. But I like that you left little stars with messages when you packed up the forest, because it just reminded me that, you know, like a trail of sparkling stars or a trail of fireflies, that magic is still sprinkled there and will not, you know, ever leave. The woman who started the blog, Alex, is that correct?
Uh-huh.
Are you guys friends? Like, she had no clue it was you, right?
No, they did not know. No.
Wow. So no, someone's starting this blog, and you're creating
all
these things.
Talking about.
What?
I asked Robin to tell the story about that so that folks will know what we're talking about with Alex.
Okay. So, ironically, Alex was very familiar to me. When I started seeing her on the trail, it was about 6 months after I discovered that trail, and she's about 5 feet tall. She's a tiny little thing, and she has muscles just coming out of every part of her body. She's just very, very fit and muscular, and she'd get on that trail, and she walked like she had something serious to get to, and, you know, had her headphones on and didn't make eye contact ever. She just boomed right past you. But I saw her twice a day, every day for, you know, months, many months. And it wasn't until the house with the acorn movers had appeared and then vanished that she actually stopped and spoke with me. And because of that, like the conspiracy, you know, the fact that it had just been taken, that created an opportunity for us to stop and talk. And so from that time forward, you know, when we would see each other on the trail, we would, you know, wave or she would say a couple things and we'd have this brief interaction. And she did discover later that it was me. And she was very surprised. But I also wished still to this day, perhaps the anonymity could have been preserved just because I know that she was going through her own personal, she still is going through her own experience. And it was just, it was, you know, it's hard to get found out is the thing.
Yeah.
It's just hard. Because particularly because I had developed kind of a relationship with her on the trail, you know, does it feel dishonest? I'm not really sure. It's just to be in my position, it's very disconcerting. Yes, very awkward. And anyway,
you know,
so
my nephew had a girlfriend last year, and she was going through a very painful, difficult time with her family. So I bought her a bracelet that just says "You are loved." And I mailed it to her anonymously, thinking nothing of it. Like, I just thought it was a nice gesture to remind her that, you know, God was with her and she was going to get through this. Her family, like, basically called the police. Like, I thought she had someone stalking them.
Oh, no.
It was so embarrassing. And so I had, like, I don't even know this girl. It's my nephew's girlfriend. So I had to, like, call the family and say that I had sent that.
Dear.
And no, I don't love her. It was just supposed to be, I signed the note from your angel, but apparently they still thought it was creepy. So, yeah, awkward.
Okay. Well, that didn't turn out quite the way you meant it. However, on the flip side of that, you know, Parker came home and he was telling me about, he received a text from this girl, and the text went something like, "Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me in class today. I know that you probably can't understand how meaningful that was to me, but to, you know, something about taking the time to talk to me when I have no friends meant everything and changed the way I felt the rest of the day." And Parker was reading that to me, and I started crying. And I was just thinking, you know, how many moments have we all experienced, you know, where you're just having a rotten day, or you're really struggling with something that feels like will take you under in any second, and somebody reaches out. It can just be a kind look. It can be somebody opening the door at just the right moment. It can be somebody expressing love and concern. Simple, tiny things, perhaps a bracelet that says "you're loved," can change, can be the turning point of a person's day. Why wouldn't we all want to do that for one another if we're able?
Right.
It doesn't take much.
But the cool thing, too, and I don't mean to pick on men, I swear, but I think it's cool that you're raising boys who are going to be really amazing men, who are comfortable being men and comfortable having emotions and sharing that vulnerability with other people. That's a gift right there.
And well, they are, I am, oh my gosh, I am every day of my life so grateful to be a mother, so blessed to have these personalities in my life, to get to know them the way that I have, and to be able to experience them the way that I get to is just such a blessing to me personally. I love being a mother, and I love those boys.
Wow. Well, speaking of being a mother, one of the highlights of the documentary was the story of Allie, who was called Little Owl, who died of brain cancer at the age of 3, and she left, her sister left a note in the Firefly Forest, her family did, and you ended up creating a door in honor of Little Owl, with Little Owl on the door, and that whole story is just so awe-inspiring, both on your part, and I found the mother to be just so strong in that mm-hmm. documentary. Can you tell us a little bit about that, and do you guys still talk today?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So The Fisher family and I, yes, we in fact, we donated that tree to Primary Children's Hospital together. I have tremendous respect and love for that amazing group of people. So, yes, we are friends, and, yes, we do talk, and, yes, we do continue to work together. The day that I found that note was a very hard day for me. I was just having a very, very bad day. And it's very easy, I think, for all of us when we're having bad days to think, why me? Mm-hmm. It couldn't get any worse. You know, all of the things that we do when we're kind of wallowing or circling the drain. And, you know, things get put into perspective very quickly. When I came across that note, it very literally stopped me in my tracks. And I just thought about my boys, and I thought, could it get worse? You're darn right it could get worse. Mm-hmm. And my heart just broke for this family. It was Kelly who left the note. My heart just broke in an instant. And that was just the natural response that I had to it. But what I will say is I made the door, and then I held on to it for a long time. I didn't install it for months because I did not want, you know, everybody experiences grief differently. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know these people. And although I had intended it to be out of respect to memorialize their loss, I didn't know that that's how they would interpret it. And so I wanted to be very careful about how I approached that. And after thinking about it and talking about it a lot with Tyler, in the end, I did decide to hang it. And I was so pleased to know that that was meaningful to them. But I was terrified to meet them, terrified. And they're so gracious, and they're so good, and they're so kind. And she is so willing to share her grief. I mean, that is every parent's worst nightmare. And she's willing to share it. You know, she not only experienced it, but she shares it freely for other people. And to me, that is just a remarkable thing. And still with Allie's story, you know, that is their story, not mine. And so I still try to be very, very careful and respectful. So as we move forward, I just wanted to continue doing these things. And when I moved to Salt Lake, both of my boys have been saved at Primary Children's Hospital. So it's a very important place to me personally. And I knew that I wanted to create a tree for them, but I knew that it had to be with Allie. And so when I called Kelly and talked to her about it, she was super supportive. And I really appreciate that they're willing to continue to work with me, because it's been a very positive thing. No matter what we do together, it ends up being a very positive experience. So they're great, and they're doing wonderfully.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. Wow. Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful. And you're continuing to make doors now, right?
I do. I live in a place that, gosh darn it, doesn't have any hollow trees. And so you can't make a door if you don't have a place to stick it. And I make doors for people who, you know, through my website, but I also continue to make these larger homes. And so my solution was I had to create trees that could be converted into hollow trees. And the tree that I placed at Primary Children's was just this big behemoth of a tree from the tree graveyard that I hollowed out and converted into this beautiful, living, breathing, magical narrative. And that's what I'm doing now, is taking these big trees that have been discarded and turning them into something different that hopefully will bring healing and just positive, imaginative experiences to people who really need it.
So cool. I have the red door, and I just tell you all, order one of her doors, because just your packaging is cool.
Oh, thank you. I'm still working on it.
I loved the way it was packaged, and it was so funny because I have a fairy tree outside of our house, and I wanted this door to be inside my house, and I wanted it to just appear. And then the box comes, and there's all this fun stuff on the outside. I hid that thing so fast from my girls.
That's funny.
And I hung it up, and it looked so cool. And maybe 3 months after it was there, It's in the little hallway leading to my girls' bedrooms. And I go to wake them up one morning, and there's math homework in front of the door. And I'm like, huh. What the heck is math homework doing in front of the fairy door? So I asked my youngest, and she goes, Mom, I need help with math. She was
She's
hoping,
turning to the gods.
Yeah, exactly. So she put it out there, and so now it's like become a little routine in my family. If you need help with something, you tell it to the door.
Oh, my gosh, that's funny.
I love it.
Well, wonderful. Whatever works.
That's right. If you guys go to fireflyforestdoors.com, you can read more about Robin on her blog, and you can there's a shop link there, too, if you want to check out her doors. They're really cool. And it says you're a self-taught carpenter. What does that mean? Because you're so talented. It's just it's amazing that you're self-taught.
I'm self-taught. I just started working with wood out of, you know, practicality. Really, I needed a built in one of my homes, and I needed it, and I didn't have family support or anything like that. And so, if it was going to get done, I was going to do it. And so, I just noodled out a way to do it and did it, and it ended up turning out pretty great. And in the process, I discovered that I really enjoyed doing it. And I started with things like, you know, cabinetry.
Mm-hmm.
And then immediately, I mean, it just took this complete dramatic turn into creating things for kids because I have kids and I really, really like them. And so I started building forts and playhouses and dinosaur gardens and all sorts of things, you know, that would bring delight to kids. And how did I learn it? It's the way I learn anything still. I just do it, you know?
You do it, and you do it well. You know, you keep saying kids, but don't you find it interesting that I feel, and I could be wrong, but I feel like the majority of the people who have received healing from your work are adults.
Absolutely, and wasn't that a surprise?
Yeah.
Yes, I did. I agree. And that was a surprising discovery, but it is absolutely true. So with kids, they immediately buy into the fantasy of it, mm-hmm. the story, whatever they think it should be. They buy in immediately, and that is so fun. But what I found was the way that adults were responding to them, interacting with them, was just as passionately, but I think what I decided after it was all said and done is when you cannot explain something necessarily, it allows you the opportunity to say, okay, I can dismiss it or I can suspend my disbelief and I can hope for something beyond what I see. And I think because it kind of creates a feeling of hope, it also creates this moment of just, for me, I would be behind an adult on the trail, and I would walk slowly so that I could see them experience the door. And when they saw it, or if they didn't see it, that was significant as well. But when they saw it, this is the funny thing, is they would do a double take. This was very common. This wasn't a one-time reaction. They'd do a double take. They'd stop, stand on the trail for a minute. They wouldn't walk right over to it. It took them a minute. And then once they made the decision to walk over to it, it was really common to have them look around before they would open the door, like, is somebody watching me? Does anybody see what I'm doing? And I thought, that is so remarkable. Like, why is the adult response so different? But I think for parents, for adults, they understand that someone else is creating it.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't care. They appreciate that it's being created for them and how it's making them feel. And when you're just wallowing, you know, when you're in the depth of whatever you're experiencing, when it's a negative thing, now, aren't you desperate for a little relief,
mm-hmm.
anything?
Yeah.
And when it's unexpected, it's extremely powerful. So you're right. Adults have been very enthusiastic and very responsive. And again, that's one of those things that I approach very, very with a certain amount of reverence, because it signifies something to them that is important to them, and I want to be considerate of that.
You know, Can I bring in a perspective here on that, Robin, in that I so hope that I never lose that childlike wonder and that true belief in magic and miracles and whatever language you want to give that. And as I was listening to you talk about adult responses on the trail to the doors, I thought, that isn't what I would do at all. I would be on my hands and knees opening that door in a skinny.
Me too.
And I have to tell you that the fairy garden that Samantha created for her girls out in front of her house before she got your door, miracles happened in that fairy garden. Crystals would appear in the front yard. Remember those, Samantha? And
a peanut plant grew.
Yes.
Remember the peanut?
A
peanut plant grew.
Like peanuts,
plant.
That
never even knew there was such a thing.
Yeah, there is, Samantha. Southern thing, honey. But yeah. You know, and these wonderful things happened. And she would call me and she would say, "You're not going to believe what the fairies did today." And I would always say, "Yes, I will believe it, Samantha. I will always believe that." And so I hope that, and I have a feeling that one of the other gifts that you gave the adults, in addition to the hope and the kindness and the wonderful other things that you've done, is that you've also reminded them to keep that child within them whole and to believe in magic and miracles that they might have lost.
Well, I hope so, because that is, for me, I was granted that gift by a very inspirational, very influential aunt that I had that really, that is what you just described yourself as seeing and not questioning, absolutely accepting miracles and magic and just these amazing experiences. I had that when I was a kid. And she died, and she left me with that gift. She left me with the appreciation for seeing things through multiple filters, but always through a filter of a willingness to accept more than I can see. And when you do that, suddenly you can see more.
That's the thing. The immediate response
is you see more, and peanut plants start growing in your fairy garden. You know, it's just the way that it works.
It's amazing, isn't it? What a gift! What an absolute gift that is.
You know, one thing I'm taking away from this, you know, I've been through so many dark nights of the soul. I've invested in flashlights, and whenever I'm going through my dark time, I tend to work my butt off because I like to get lost in work, or I distract myself in some way. I'll join a gym or something, anything to distract me from whatever's going, the sadness going on in my life. But what I'm hearing from you, and what I hope our listeners will also take away, is that the two best ways to get through those dark nights of the soul are through connection and service.
Without any doubt. There is no doubt in my mind, because what we need in good times and bad is each other. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean we have to be alike. It doesn't mean that we have to have similar views on absolutely everything. It's our differences that color this world. I mean, truly like a tapestry. And being able to reach out and allow someone else's strength and power to heal us and help us when we need it. We rob ourselves of having those experiences when we don't allow the opportunity to exist. And the opposite is true. When we're doing well, that is our time to be aware of those who are in need. That is our time to reach out and pull another person up. That's the service piece, you know, of this experience. So one or the other, each one fuels each other, but if you're not willing to look up and you're not willing to reach out and you're not willing to reach up, you will never get there. And in the end, you will truly be alone.
Mm-hmm. There's a wonderful comment I need to tell you about in the chat room, Robin. Someone has written that that this show and being here and being in this moment in this show with you tonight has reminded him to accept what the universe knows I need instead of trying to control and manipulate what I think I need. And I think
love that.
Isn't that wonderful? Thank you for that great comment in our chat room, because it's that's so true, I think, for so many of us. The universe does give us what we need.
I agree. And those painful, dark moments, they're not without intentional purpose. They're there for a reason. And if we allow them to refine us rather than define us, then we walk away stronger, better, more happy.
Oh, I like that. Refine us rather than... I like the way you said that.
Quite phrase.
Now, you have a really great book out called Lost and Found in Firefly Forest that has also great pictures in it, too. So I recommend everybody check that out. It's really fun. My kids and I like to look through it again and again. It says you have another book in the works. Are you able to talk about that a little bit?
Just a little bit. I'm working with a publishing house, and we've got a couple books planned. One will be a picture book, and the other one is a more detailed children's story.
Oh, that's cool. Do you ever want to do a book for adults?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
I think you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Robin, in your wildest dreams, imagine that this was how your life was going to twist and turn?
No, not remotely. Absolutely not remotely. No. No.
See,
but you know what? Here we are. And no, it doesn't resemble what I worked for and what I had hoped for or what I thought was right for me, just like your caller said, trying to manipulate what you think is best for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
However, I am happy, and I have amazing, amazing boys. And this isn't the life I planned, but it's a good life, you know? And I am very satisfied to be where I'm at and still enjoying new experiences and being open to letting the world teach me and learning from other people. And I find that immensely satisfying.
So right now you are raising two boys who are they both teenagers?
Yes.
Okay, so
they are.
Let's all send extra prayers to Robin.
Thank you.
You're raising teenagers. You're in graduate school. You're working at your marketing job, and you're doing all of this other writing and publishing and doors and everything else on the side. Am I getting that correct?
Yeah. It's a lot.
But it's so cool, because I bet when you were, you know, one of those moments where you were probably just in a heap on the floor of your bathroom crying, you know, as your marriage was ending, if someone had walked in, an angel or a gnome, and said, hey, cheer up, Robin, in a couple of years, this is what it's going to look like, you probably wouldn't have believed them.
No, I couldn't have even imagined it. I couldn't have even conceptualized it.
And I want people to hear that, too, that, you know, in those dark moments when we can't see the light, we just never know where it's going to come from. And I think
that's great
that you didn't wait for someone to hand you a flashlight. You built your own flashlight and got, you know, which I think is so inspiring. So I love your message. Deb, do you have any final questions before we have to close out our hour?
I don't. I just do really recommend that folks go to Robin's website. Again, it's fireflyforestdoors.com, and take a look at her wonderful work that she is continuing to do. Certainly see the documentary, The Gnomist, cry and laugh and just know that that what Robin has done, you all can do too. We all have the capacity to give and to be kind and to do the wonderful things that Robin has done. Robin, I have to tell you that we always close our show with a sentence that, in my thinking, sums up everything you do. And we always ask our listeners to be the light. So we thank you for being a light.
Oh, thank you.
thank you so much for being on our show. We are true fans, and we hope that this show at least spreads your message to as many people as possible. So, guys, if you loved this show, tell your friends about it so they can hear Robin's words of wisdom. Thank you so much for joining us, Robin. And everyone, be the light.
Good night, everyone. Have a great week. We'll be with you next week. Good night.
Good night.